Welcome to the Global Business Women's Pod, brought to you by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I am Susan Dyson and proud to be the CEO, President, and Founder of the Chamber. Please join us for this empowering podcast every Thursday at 6 p.m.
Please welcome to the stage the Women Leading Sports Panel, CEO, Harris County Sports Authority, Janice Burke, philanthropist Joanne King Herring, General Manager Houston Dash, Alex Singer, President Houston Rockets, Gretchen Shear, and Texas Center for Cosmetic Dentistry moderator Guy Lewis.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Guy Lewis, and I'm honored to be here today with all of you, and especially to be with this esteemed panel. We're going to be talking about women in sports today, and we have a great panel here, so I'm just going to just call them by name, and then in a second I'm going to ask each one of them just to give a brief introduction of themselves. But we have Janice Burke here with the Harris County Houston Sports Authority. We have Alex Singer with the Houston Dash women's soccer team. And we have Gretchen Shear, who's here with the Houston, from the Houston Rockets. So thank you all for being here. And would you start us off, please, Jess?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm Janice Burke, the CEO of the Harris County Houston Sports Authority. I know it's a long name, but basically, we oversee the debt service, about $1.2 billion of debt service on our stadiums. We helped get them built right after a tumultuous time when the Houston Oilers had left town to become the Tennessee Titans, and the Rockets and Astros were also being courted by other cities. I think the elected officials at the time said, we can't be the third largest county and fourth largest city in the United States and not have professional sports teams. And so they created our organization. We continue to oversee that debt service. Really proud to be working with the tenants. They're great tenants. They put a lot of their own money into the buildings to keep them up. And then later, as the buildings were built, we morphed into the sports marketing agency for the city and county. And we go out and bid against other cities to bring things like Final Four, college football playoffs, and the most recent one, World Cup.
Great. Thank you. Alex, can you go next, please?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Alex Singer. I just moved to Houston, actually in September, to become the first standalone general manager of the Houston Dash. So far, I've been very, very warmly welcomed to the city, and I played soccer professionally for about 7 years, and afterwards, I was on the agency side of the business representing female athletes, female soccer players, and media personalities with Octagon. I knew I wanted to make my way back to the team side of things, and especially at such a transformational time and exciting time for women's soccer and women's sport. That said, the opportunity with the Houston Dash, came up, and as soon as I spoke with the organization, I knew it was the right fit for me. I'm extremely excited to be leading a team of such phenomenal women on and off of the field. The goals of the organization are big, and this is an ambitious organization, and that's what drew me to this project. We are coming off of the most successful season in the history of the club under relatively new ownership and new leadership with our president, now COO, Jessica O'Neill. And the momentum is very strong. So hopefully some of you will come out to a Dash game, but we sold out PNC Stadium for our first playoff game ever, and I'm really excited to build upon that looking into 2023 and beyond.
Thank you. Now, I read something in your bio or online. Were you not one of the first players in the first inaugural women's soccer game ever? Professional women's soccer game?
Not ever.
okay.
Not that old. I So this is the third iteration of a women's professional soccer league in the United States. So I was a part of both the second and the third, the current league. The second league was called Women's Professional Soccer, WPS, and that kicked off in 2009, and I was a member of that league. I was a first-round draft pick in that first league, which was very exciting. And things have come a very long way since then for the sport. Even in the current league, the NWSL is now in its 10th year, going into its 11th year. There's been such a transformation and evolution, and it just continues. So exciting times.
Great. Gretchen.
Hi, my name is Gretchen Scheer. I'm the president of business operations for the Houston Rockets and Clutch City Sports and Entertainment. Clutch City Sports and Entertainment works really closely with Janice and her team as we operate Toyota Center. So my role involves everything that happens at Toyota Center and everything that happens at the Houston Rockets, except for which players are on the court and our win-loss record. That belongs to our general manager and Alex's counterpart. So any experience that you have at Toyota Center, except for what happens on the court with the team, that is under my purview. I am basically from Houston. I was raised in Spring. I was a gymnast and then a diver, so I used to train at the WAC here. My family has lived in the Woodlands for 15 years, so I make the awesome commute from down the road from here to downtown nearly every day. I started shortly after I graduated college from being a diver at LSU. I started working in the sports industry, quickly got a job to sell tickets with the Houston Rockets 22 seasons ago, and I basically had every job you could possibly have from them to now the team president.
You have a great background for being president, right? Well, I'm glad that this guest made it today. She is a legend, to say the least, and a philanthropist of our Houston area, Joanne King Herring. And can you take a moment and just tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
No. I'd rather talk about you, and I'd rather talk about the girls we got out of Afghanistan who were the soccer players. May I?
Sure.
Will that be okay? Thank you. Anyway, in the middle of the night, I got a call from this guy called Robert McCready, McQuarrie. I made that mistake and we almost lost him. Anyway, he's a soldier of fortune, a guy that had made a lot of money in the oil business, and he decided that that was pretty dull, and so he was going to start rescuing people whose lives were in danger. So he upped and went to Afghanistan, which was very sad. And you know, if you know anything about me, that I've been very involved in Afghanistan a long time. So that was why he called me. And he said, Joanne, the Sheikh of Qatar has a plane sitting on the tarmac. And I have the female soccer team of Afghanistan. And they are for sale. In other words, they were up for anybody wanting to buy them. And so he said, do you know the Sheikh of Qatar? I said, no, I don't. He said, well, you know all those sheikhs out there. Find somebody. So I said, okay, who do you think I could call? He said, well, call Vicki Holland. She's the new CEO of Occidental Petroleum. So I called her, and Vicki Holland took my phone call. And she was very cordial and nice. And so she said, what can I do for you? That was a wrong, dumb question, because she was really going to get it. I said, okay, the Sheikh of Qatar has his plane parked on the tarmac, and I have 300 girls we have to get out of Afghanistan, but the team will fit on the plane. And she was marvelous. She called him, and he said, nope, I've got a plane out there, but I'm not sending it because it's dangerous, and I don't want to risk the corporation's money. And so she said, I'll tend to it. She came up with $400,000. That's what it took to rent a plane. So we finally got them to the plane, got them loaded, only to find out they also had a goat. And I ended up having to get 500 girls and a goat out of Afghanistan.
Thank you for that so much. She's an amazing woman. Okay, so Dan, I'm going to start with you on a question to kind of get the panel going on the sports. Tell us about, and kind of set the stage for us a little bit, about how the Houston Sports Authority brings events to our region and the economic impact of that. And tell us about how you guys landed the 2026 World Cup, which is amazing.
Yeah, so we started the World Cup bid about 10 years ago, believe it or not. The last time that World Cup was in the United States, 1994, Houston was not even at the table. We weren't even thought of as a host city. And so we knew that the United States was going to bid again. We started then strategizing, well, how do we make sure that this time we're not overlooked? So we went out and we bid for every international friendly. We did Copa America, we did NCAAs, that's like their Final Four. It's similar to men's basketball, but it's a soccer tournament. We took big events, small events, we put them either in our soccer stadium or out at Energy Stadium, and just made our mark to ensure that the world knew we were a great soccer region. And so when the bid came about, and this was the first time that three countries were going to bid together, Mexico, United States, and Canada, we called and said, it was right after the Hurricane Harvey, and we said, hey, why don't we pull all cities together, and why don't you do it in Houston? We could really use the business, and we could use the infuse of positive attitude here as we're rebuilding our city. And so they said, great idea. So the it was called United Bid Committee. The team brought every city here to Houston that was bidding. And they started out with about 50 cities, believe it or not, between all three countries. And it was seminars about kind of how this bid process was going to take place and what was going to happen. And we started our relationship really early because of that meeting and conference that took place here in Houston. And again, that was very strategic. Once they left town, it was about a year process of putting all of the legal documents together. There's things that you don't even think about such as we have a rodeo and they want you to grow the grass 6 months in advance, which meant, you know, we wouldn't be able to host our rodeo. Well, that wasn't going to happen. So we had to figure out how to grow grass faster, more efficiently, working with Texas A&M. So there's a lot of things behind the scenes when you're bidding for these big mega events. There's other things like Energy Stadium cannot be called Energy Stadium during World Cup. All stadiums are called World Cup Stadium. Well, they paid millions of dollars for that right. So working with Energy, their CEO loves soccer, so we have a great relationship, and they realized that this was part of the bid process. But all of that takes time. There's a lot of legal documents. Once that was turned in, we were narrowed down, and there were 17 United States cities put into the bid that went to FIFA, and we were told that it would be narrowed down to 10 cities at the end of the day. The cities in Mexico and Canada were already chosen, so it was really this fight now. And when I say a dogfight, it's really a dogfight because every city wants to be a host city of the world's largest sporting event. Every city's putting their best foot forward. They're putting great teams together. Every city has great stadiums. When you're talking about LA, New York, Atlanta, you know, Philadelphia, they're all great cities that do big major events. And so at that point in time, I went to our board of directors and said, look, you know, we've got men's Final Four next year. We've got college football playoffs the year after that. We've got Junior Olympics in 2025. I have all of these events that we have to concentrate on, but I think we need somebody that gets up every single day just thinking about soccer. And so I went to Chris Canetti, who was running, he was president of the Dynamo and Dash team at the time, and said, would you consider leaving your post to come work with us to make sure that Houston makes it as a final city? And really happy that he decided to make that move. It was a temporary position, possibly, if Houston didn't win. It was a gamble on his part, but he did come, and he took us to the finish line. One of the interesting things, too, is we hired the United Bid Committee that was overseeing the bid against Morocco that, you know, oversaw the bid for Canada and United States and Mexico. Once the bid was won, they dismantled and they all took other jobs. And so the head of that bid committee, I went to him and flew him to Houston, and I said, we were out having a drink at Pitch 25, and I said, okay, tell me the truth. If you would have been forced by FIFA to pick 10 cities, would Houston have made it? And he said, well, it's really tough. You're on the cusp. Not because Houston didn't deserve to make it, because I know what you have to offer, but because Houston isn't as well known in Zurich, and I needed to win against Morocco, so we would have maybe put in 10 cities that they knew really well to ensure we won. And I said, okay, I want to hire you, and your job is to make sure with Chris Canetti that we are one of the 10 and that you don't have to hesitate. And through that process, we thought it was going to be a year. COVID hit. It ended up being 3 years later. We had to go raise the money. There was a lot in between that 3 years we had to do. But we raised the dollars. We put a local organizing committee together. And together, through strategy, we actually became the leaders in the United States. Every city was looking to what we were doing. We're the only one that had hired 2 full-time people. We're the only ones that had raised millions of dollars. And lo and behold, we won the bid, and it was a great day.
I don't know if we all appreciate as much what a big deal that is. That is such a big deal. I mean, it's almost like having, I don't know how many games will be played, but it's almost like having 50 Super Bowls or something. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it'll be 35 days of soccer. Unlike Super Bowl, which is really big, it is a great sporting event, but that is about a week. You fit all the activities into a week. This is 35 days. We'll have 5 or 6 matches. So it'll be like having, you know, 6 Super Bowls in our city. It is the world's largest event as far as sporting events and viewership. 5.1 billion people are soccer fans around the world.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for that. Alex, start us off with a little bit about challenges that you faced, and what do you see as the biggest challenge facing women in sports today, and maybe some of the own challenges that you faced?
Sure. I think I'm certainly facing a lot of challenges in a new role, but I would say with that, I think just historically, I think there's a question about women in leadership roles and how they are, what types of leaders they are. I think, yeah, traditionally men are seen as stronger leaders, but I think that the advantages that women have are around, at least what I see in my personal experience, are a lot of emotional intelligence. And especially in my spot where there's a lot of negotiations going on, a lot of negotiations both with women and men, but I think in my position where I'm managing multiple pieces, putting pieces of a puzzle together, that having a really strong grasp on that is key. Like I said, in my role, every day, of course, we all face challenges, but it's coming from multiple directions, and it's really a personnel, finding personnel solutions. And with that, I think just having that kind of strategic, emotional connection and knowing how to strategically communicate with each stakeholder, whether that's our ownership, whether that's the party I'm negotiating against, whether those are my players, you know, you need to know what to say, when to say, how to get a message across, depending on what group of people that you're speaking with. For the players, it's a lot of times about motivation, because I am making a lot of decisions about who's on the field and who is on our roster. There's a lot of question marks at times, and everybody wants to play, but it's how do you motivate those when you know maybe they aren't going to play, but you need to get the best out of them. And I think that goes the same across teams and organizations.
Thank you. So Gretchen, tell me, are you the only woman that's the president of a NBA organization?
There are 3 of us, so yay, they are. It's actually like It's three, depending on how you count it, it's five. So Gillian Zucker is with the Clippers. Cent Marshall is with the Mavericks. I am obviously with Houston. There is a woman in Sacramento who actually I would elevate as a bit of a higher role. Like they have an ownership group. It's owned by multiple different investors, and she kind of functions as the COO of the ownership group. So isn't as involved in the day-to-day of the team, but has a very high role there. And then the Indiana Pacers have a woman who holds a president title, and she operates the facility that that Indiana plays in.
So what advantages would you say as a woman that you have you feel like you have in leading a team that's in a typically male dominated
area? I get asked that question often, so. First of all, Joanna, thank you so much for all that you do. She wakes up every day. I'm like, how can I sell lives, like save lives and get soccer players out? And I'm like, how can I respond to people asking for tips on how to get Taylor Swift tickets? So that is, you know, the importance on what we're doing on a daily basis. But from a leadership perspective for women in sports, I tell people all the time, like our staff, for as long as I've worked with the organization, I feel like half of our organization has been women, right? So there's times where it's like, it doesn't feel like it's male dominated. And then you really start to pay attention and it's, well, what are the positions? Is it support roles? Is it not that HR and marketing and some of these other roles are not important, but they typically are not the roles that then lead to a president of business operations role. That path is normally, if you look at all of the team presidents, male or female, across all of the leagues, they are usually either they were the general counsel, right, who was negotiating deals and doing big legal mergers and acquisitions, or it's the person who came up on the sales side who was cutting large partnership deals, naming rights, media rights agreements. Those paths are very few women. There's a lot of reasons for that, just an aggressive nature of sales roles, or when before sports marketing and sports business was a big thing, it was former players who just started working in the front office. And when you're working for a male team, obviously the former players are males. And so that dynamic was there. So moving forward, I think for every person in the industry, it's really making sure that there are women that are set up for success across all levels of the organization, particularly in the verticals that typically lead into those team president roles.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Janice, I'm gonna ask you, and I'm gonna maybe let each one of y'all answer this question. But what advice, now that you've gotten to where you are and you've been through it and climbed the ladder, so to speak, what advice did you wish you'd, if you could go back and give yourself 20 years ago, what advice would you give yourself for those out here who are aspiring to what y'all are doing, which is so impressive? What advice would you give to someone?
Well, I'm asked that question a lot as well, and we deal with a lot of young people in our office. And one of the things that I would say is you can be a leader in any role that you hold in an organization. How many of you have worked in an office and you get there, you're a new employee, and you can see right away if you need an answer who to go to? And it might be the assistant who's sitting there, to a vice president, but seems to know how to connect and where all the answers are. That's a leader in that organization. There are leaders in every aspect of our organization, and I want that, whether they're males or females, to say, I want them to take ownership of whatever role they've been given. And then if you aspire to be the head of an organization, you know, really ask yourself, well, do you want to make that personal sacrifice? And it's okay if you don't, because one of the things that we all have in common is we do work a lot of hours. We have, I know Gretchen has a really supportive spouse. I do as well, because you need that dynamic if you're going to want to take that next step. And not everybody has to be a leader. But if you do, make sure that you're ready, that you want to take that role on, because it is extra responsibility, it is extra hours, it is extra sacrifices, and everybody has to make those choices in life.
Can you answer that too, Alex?
Really good advice. I would say throughout each kind of phase of my career, it was about a mentor and finding a mentor. I think it, for me, it was a little bit of a different pocket of the industry, and whether that was as a player, finding somebody to really look towards and not speak about, you know, the specifics of the sport, but what I wanted and what I wanted for the future. So I think it's very simple for me. I would always advise anybody looking to specifically get into this industry is find good mentors. It doesn't always mean that they are exactly in your vertical or even in your organization, but there's such an amazing network. And I think actually the more that you can go outside of your bubble, the more personal growth you'll have. I think just connecting and developing those relationships, you just go outside of your comfort zone, you learn about yourself, you learn about what others are doing, how they're leading. So very simple is the mentorship aspect and finding mentors.
Great. Gretchen?
My general advice is to, one, like, stay true to your authentic self, because I feel like when you put yourselves in positions where you have to compromise on who you are, what you want to accomplish, what your presentation style is, doesn't mean that you can't grow, but that generally eventually isn't going to work out. And then also to create your own path and make sure that people understand, like, a lot of times, particularly in this business, because it is really tight-knit, it's hard to get into. It's awesome and it's fun, but then people don't leave. And so there feels like when you get in, it's like, this is the path. I get this job and then I get this job and then I get this job. And a lot of times that means you have to move cities and you have to go for other opportunities. And so sometimes I feel like people create this career path because somebody did it before them and they feel like that's what they need to do. And so I tell particularly young women, like, that's great. It's a good example of how someone else did it, but make sure that you're staying true to yourself and creating your own path. And I had mentioned earlier, you know, I've been with the Rockets 22 years. That is very abnormal, particularly to start at an entry-level position and then become the team president. And so there was a period of time, particularly over the last, I've been in this role for a year and a half, over the last 5 or 6 years, where it was very obvious that there were not a lot of women team presidents. So I was getting a lot of calls from every league, from every market to interview and talk because I was qualified and I was ready for that next step. And it was very hard to say no to a role in a different market with a different team, with a different league that I wasn't passionate about, because I felt like I had this responsibility for women everywhere, that if there was this opportunity to become a team president, that I needed to be the one to do it. But I just knew that it wasn't going to be right for my family. It wasn't the right opportunity. I hadn't finished what I was trying to accomplish here in Houston. And it doesn't always work out, but it ended up working out for me here as well. So,
would you like to share with us what advice?
I would like to apologize to you and to everybody. I thought that was my part of the program. So I was telling you everything I knew about it, and I could have told you a lot less. And I apologize, ladies. So I just congratulate you for what you've done. I do want to say this one thing. When I was growing up, people thought that a girl that would go out and play with the boys was really not quite right. Yeah. And so when I started hearing about women actually being sportscasters, even a sportscaster, much less running a team, and then playing on one, golly, you're wonderful.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again next Thursday at 6 p.m.